The Variety Artist, episode 13. This one's all about school assemblies and working with a partner. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to this podcast on your phone or mobile device. It really helps me a lot. And yes, folks, I have waiting for you your own free copywriting checklist. Have you ever looked at a blank web page or sales letter or ad or postcard or any promotional piece and said, "Where do I start?" Well, this checklist will get you going. Just follow along step by step, and in a very short period of time, you'll have written your very own unique promotional piece. And it really is free. Just go to my homepage at thevarietyartist.com, click one of the pictures that says free copywriting checklist, and get your copy. Now let's start the show.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
Today, we're getting a double dose of amazing guests. Since 1999, this duo has performed themed educational shows for elementary school assemblies, theaters, and community venues in California and throughout America. One is an internationally published singer-songwriter, and the other is a professional comic, juggler, vocalist, and trumpet player. With over 55 years of experience between them, Variety Artists, I give you Mark Beckwith and Obadiah Thomas. They are Razzle Bam Boom!
Hey, welcome!
Hello!
How's it going, guys?
Oh, good. Super!
Good.
Awesome. Good. Every time I say Razzle Bam Boom, I'm going to go, boom!
Well, I'm just so happy that you got it right, because we had a principal introduce us this morning as Razzle Dazzle Boom.
Oh!
That's not the first time.
No, the... Initially, she said, "This is Obedia Thomas."
And we
then the next show, she got that right and got the name of the duo wrong.
Yeah. Wait, well, just so our audience knows, okay, Mark, who's Mark? Mark, say something.
I'm the handsome one here, Mark, right? The voice,
the handsome voice, and Obadiah,
and I'm the tall one over here.
Okay, so the handsome one and the tall one.
Yeah,
and I'm the other guy.
Yeah.
So Obadiah, where did that name come from? Because that's a real unique name. I love that.
Yeah, it comes from a great-great-great-great-grandfather who fought at the Battle of Bunker Hill, Revolutionary War, Captain Obadiah Mann. It was my middle name all through, through my life. It still is. the whole story, and you can edit this out, but the whole
story. Time's up.
I want to hear the story.
Thomas Obadiah Mann, and all through school, I knew my middle name was Obadiah, but I never really used it. I just knew it. And then in high school, they said, write down on this piece of paper exactly how you want your full name to appear on your diploma. So I did. And then my mother, who was on the school board, is handing me the diploma, and she looks down and she sees I spelled my middle name wrong.
Oh.
O-B-E-D-I-A-H. But I'm stubborn. I'm so incredibly stubborn. I kept the misspelling, went into the Army, and all the paperwork there was O-B-E-D-I-A-H, and then I went on stage as Obadiah Thomas, because I heard about some other person who switched their name around for the middle name, first name, blah, 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 and I thought, okay, I'll do that. And then years later, I'm like 30 years old, and we find a picture of Captain Obadiah Mann's tombstone, and he spelled it O-B-E-D-I-A-H. So lesson, kids, always be stubborn.
There you go. And Mark, where did you come up with Mark?
I have a boring name. That's just Mark. Yeah. I don't have a story to go with my name.
Well, now his name is a New Testament name, and mine's an Old Testament name.
Yeah,
Obadiah is the shortest book in the Old Testament.
The kids remember his name because it's unique. They forget my name.
Yeah.
How did you guys come up with Razzle Bam Boom?
We thought it embodied kind of, what we are.
Yeah.
Just something exciting, noisy, musical, funny.
Yeah,
you know.
And it can be used in different venues, a family venue and a school venue. Yeah,
so we kind of fooled around with it until we came up with the right name. What was that name William said we should call it?
Oh, Rats of Cancun.
Rats of Cancun. No, we decided to go with Razzle Bam Boom. Yeah.
Rack-a-lamboozle. That was another one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys had shows this morning?
Had shows this morning.
Yeah, we did.
Moore Park, California, yeah. H2O, where did you go? It's a show about water conservation and water science. And
that's one of our shows. We have.
Yeah, you have 11 shows. Like, is that 11?
Yeah,
I think it's 11 or 12 now. I don't know. Yeah,
it depends. We got solo shows and duo shows, and
yeah, we create a new show just about every year. So. Yeah,
we could talk about them all right now, but go to our website, razzlebamboo.com, and you can see all the shows that are there, and I don't have to remember what we're doing.
Well, how do you come up with the new shows? What makes you decide this is the new show for this year?
I think initially it was what we wanted, and then we decided we wanted to make money, so we decided we would create what they wanted.
Yeah, and we're in a unique position because we're going out to all these schools, so we can actually survey the teachers and the PTA and the principals and just flat out ask them, what shows do you need? What shows are you looking for? What show would you like us to work on?
Yeah.
And the great thing is, too, is that we can actually send them questionnaires. I said, well, what would be in a show that you were talking about? And then keep them informed as we're developing the show. And then the principals all across whoever think that they're part of the show. And they are, because they're helping us create it. So when it actually is released, they're like, yeah, I want that thing I've been talking about and hearing about all this time.
Yeah, it's way easier to sell somebody something that that they think they put together themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Our first show was 200 Years of American Music, which I think is a fantastic show.
I like it. Yeah.
But be honest, you know, we sold it 3, maybe 4 times this year. It's an arts. It's a show about art and the music of America. But it's just not a show that people have to have. And but once you see it, though, you're like, oh man, it's a great show. But you know, the content-wise, it's not what principals have to have. And they're so into curriculum. It has to be curriculum-based.
Right.
Not, don't want it.
There was a day when the arts was a part of the curriculum, but now maybe not as much. Not as much as math or science.
Yeah. Well, our first school assembly was back in 2001. We had just, we put together the show over the summer, and we sent out about 500 mailings, I think, in late August or early September. Well,
you know what happened in 2001.
Yep.
In September.
It happened after we wrote the show, by the way. We weren't opportunists.
No. But all these schools got this packet in the mail about 200 Years of American Music. Everybody was feeling very patriotic, and they needed that. And they called us, and we were there to provide something for the kids and the teachers that they needed and wanted.
Oh, perfect. I actually had a show that day. I remember.
Oh yeah,
September 11th, 2001. Mm. I had a show that day, and I had to leave in the afternoon to go do a show, and I couldn't believe it. I actually kept my kids home from school that day, but I went to a school and did a show.
Wow,
it was crazy. So tell me about your personal lives a little bit, Mark. Let's start with you. What does that look like?
A mess. Oh boy. Okay, so I'm a pretty old guy, so I'm the older of the two of this. Let's see, where do I start? Okay, so in the 70s, I started playing music, was in bands and did stuff. In the 80s, I toured the country in Canada with kind of a music slash show band, kind of that Nevada circuit show comedy slash music band. So I kind of got my feet wet doing a little bit of comedy or a little you know, more of that personality-based, you know, show, not just music. Did that. And then when I, you know how it is, John, when I had kids, I got off the road. Couldn't be touring anymore. But then I heard this guy, Raffi, and with my kids were young, and I went, interesting. I write songs. He writes songs. I think I can do that too. And that's kind of where I got my feet wet in children's music. I wrote songs, had songs published, put on products like Jumpstart, those computer series in the 90s, and one thing led to another, and I ended up doing what we're doing now.
Yeah, in fact, school assemblies are the perfect thing for anybody who has kids. That's why I started doing school assemblies, because my kids were smaller and I could be home by 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon to help them with their homework and be a dad.
Yeah, I think initially I started performing in malls and birthday parties, you know, like a lot of us do, and preschools. I went to a lot of preschools, so I got my feet wet with young kids. But eventually, I wanted to move to the elementary school level because I could get a little more sophisticated with creation of the songs, the content, and the shows themselves. Plus, you know, frankly, they paid better.
That's true. And Obadiah, how about you?
I grew up in Ohio, went to school in Cincinnati. I studied jazz trumpet down there.
Oh.
And wanted to be a musician. And I got to say, I went through music school, enjoyed it, but I realized I don't want to be a musician. I want to be a performer. Really different mindset between the two of those. I started doing stand-up comedy sets when I was down in college and then moved to Chicago. Was really getting into stand-up comedy because that was what I was going to do. But to make the bills, pay the bills, I was actually a juggler.
So when the bills.
So having money for like dates or something, you know, things like that. Going out for doing birthday parties as a juggler. I did full clown for a while. I did a lot of strolling juggling gigs. I learned how to do stilts. I learned how to eat fire and breathe fire and stuff like that. And then, so I was in Chicago for about 8 years, then moved out to Los Angeles for fame and fortune. But at this point, I'll take either. I don't need both.
I'll take a paycheck.
Yeah.
Some of the kids ask us, are you famous?
Yeah. You know what I always say to that? I get the same thing. I always say, today I am.
Yeah. And if you're under 11 in Southern California, there's a chance you know who we are.
That's right.
What's our definition of famous?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a Homer Simpson definition. Is people know you, but you don't know them.
Exactly. Well, how did you guys meet? How did you start working together?
Yeah, well, we were both working the mall circuit here doing the kids club shows. And do you know Wayne Daniels? Did you know Wayne Daniels?
No.
The late Wayne Daniels.
Yeah. Wayne Daniels had a whole bunch of mall shows, kids clubs. And malls, like once a week, would have a show at like 6 or 6:30 at night, free show. Parents would come in, bring their kids, juggler, magician, whatever, on stage, and then they would stick around and shop at the mall. And so we were there. So then Wayne said to me, hey, I know this guy, Mark, and he's looking for a comic who does music to be a partner with. And I said, well, how about me? And he said, no, not you. I want to keep you. I want somebody else. I said, no, give me his number. So we finally got together. I met over at his house, and we sang to see if we could sing together. We sang that John Denver song.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I wanted to make sure he could sing in tune a little bit, you know.
Well, tell them what you were looking for and why.
Well, I was looking for, well, I like the straight man comic combo, you know, the Smothers Brothers, the Martin and Lewis, you know, the classic situation. And I'm pretty good at being the straight man, so I needed somebody funny.
Yeah. Ah.
But also could compliment what I do on the guitar and singing. And
And you had done that before with another partner, Mark Towner.
Yeah, another fellow, yeah. The late Mark Towner. And
yeah.
So it was working out for me. I wanted to keep doing that. You know?
Yeah. And he approached me about it. I thought about it. And I'll tell you, this is a big decision for any performer, taking on a partner like this, because it's like a marriage, so to speak. And my thinking at the time was, wow, a partner. Oh, wait. So we would have to, like, charge twice as much for the same time of performing, like a 45-minute show, but charge twice as much. And I'm having trouble getting bookings as it is. How is this ever going to work out? But I also said, I got nothing better to do. Might as well give it a try.
Thanks a lot, Obanai. Yeah. I got nothing better to do.
He doesn't seem too creepy. I'll hang out with him.
You have to charge twice as much or do twice as many shows.
Yeah. One way or the other. And, But then I always thought, well, my show was so good. How can another guy add that much more value? But, you know, we did it. We are greater than the sum of our parts at this point.
Well, you guys have done it, because I do a lot of school assemblies like you guys do. And sometimes I'll talk to the PTA person or the principal, and I'll say, well, who have you had in the last few months, or who are you going to have? And whenever they say, oh, we're having Razzle Bam Boom, we had them last year, they were so great. And I hear nothing but good things about you guys.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
I know you always hate hearing that, because we hate hearing that too.
I'm sure. Let me twist your arm.
John Abram. Oh, man. Give me a break.
wait, I'll even prove this. You know, I put on my Facebook for people to ask questions of my guests that I'm going to have. And you guys didn't have any fan questions, but you do have fans. Oh. No questions, but you do have fans. And I'll even give you some. Eddie Rice Jr., who you guys may know, Eddie Rice, he's a clown and actor out of L.A. He says, you only pick the best. Yay! Michael Worsham, a magician out of Maryland, says they are very talented and good. Mm-hmm. Ooh, and Joyce Payne. Do you guys know Joyce the Clown out of L.A.?
Yeah, I know her. Yeah,
she says, I have loved them for years. The best.
She has good taste. Yeah.
There you go.
She was working the same mall circuit we were at the time. So I think she was a host of MC a couple times with us.
Oh, okay. Now, you guys are truly variety artists, right? I mean, you really fit into my podcast because you do a little bit of everything.
Yep.
We do it with all those skills he just mentioned, you know, juggling, stilt walking.
Stilt walking in one show.
Juggling
is in like three shows, I think.
Yeah. Of course, comedy and music, a lot of music.
I play washboard in one of the shows. I play drums in another show. Maracas and...
Trumpet, of course. Almost all the shows. Yeah.
That's good. We got dancing in our shows.
Yeah. I saw that. I saw that on your video. I saw not only you guys dancing, but the audience and what are PTA or teachers or what are those?
Yeah, we get the teachers up on stage.
It might be a stretch to call it dancing. I mean, okay, movement in rhythm.
Yeah. Well, I remember Ricardo Montalban. He said, you know what? I'm not a very good dancer, but I move pretty good. And that's how I was myself. I said, okay, I'm not a dancer, but I know how to move.
What's that little setup you do for one of the dances when you get the teachers up? It's not about
being a great dancer. It's about having fun.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, remember that great viral video, The History of Dance?
Oh,
it was like the first one to go over 100 million.
Yeah, yeah.
And every performer needs to watch that and really think about why is that so popular. And the answer is this guy is having a ball dancing. He's not a great dancer. Yeah. He's just up there having fun, and you're watching somebody have fun. If you go on stage and have fun, people love it.
That's right. That's my motto. If I'm having fun, they're having fun.
Exactly.
That's in one of my promotional videos, as a matter of fact. It is. If I'm having fun, they're having fun.
Yeah, number one rule. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And you guys look like you're having a ton of fun in all of your different shows.
Oh, man. We are having a blast. Yeah. I am loving my job.
Yep.
So when I go to do a new show, I look at the Department of Education for California. I take a look at their stuff. I know that sounds boring, but I take a look at their educational things. I make a list of them, and then I put a bunch of fun into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The standards, the curriculum, yeah.
Exactly. I look up the standards. Is that something that you guys do too?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
We do that, and we try to incorporate them in the show, and then we brag about it in our teacher's guide and our promotion. Oh, yeah, we have we're covering these standards. You know, they have to make it legit. Have a legitimate reason for hiring us.
Yeah.
Right, because the PTA, they love it. They go, well, gosh, he juggles, he does, he sings, he dances, he plays trumpet, whatever. But the PTA person has to go to the principal and say, this is the reason that I'm hiring them. It has to be educational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's I don't think it's ever about the money. It's about the time away from class.
You're
taking a lot of kids out of class, a lot of teachers away from class, and they're just sitting there, and if they don't not getting a huge benefit in relationship to what the school is trying to teach and what they're trying to accomplish, it's a waste of time.
Mm-hmm. Or at least it's perceived as a waste of time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
That's
we have so much to offer just with our, like, these 200 years of American music fun show, and kids get to learn about how to go to live theater, how to sit down, when to applaud, and all these things they learn, but that's not what they're tested on. So,
and during your show, I'm sure you have a lot of good audience control that the teachers can learn from also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Not only are the kids learning, but the teachers are learning also.
Yeah, I think so.
Indeed.
If they're smart, they'll watch you guys and other entertainers and learn from the things that you guys do.
Yeah, we've even given workshops to teachers on some of our techniques and things.
Yeah, put the showbiz into your classroom.
Yeah, and we've sort of codified a lot of our techniques, you know, in engaging kids in the course that we offer entertainers, in fact.
Oh, we're going to go into that in a little while. That's the Perform School Assemblies course?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about that a lot. But before we do that, what is kind of a typical day for you guys? A typical day of school assemblies?
Yeah, well, Mark and I live about 5 minutes away from each other, so we meet up at his house. We're usually meeting here 5:30, you know, as early as 4:30, late as today was 7:20. That was a late day.
Yeah, that's not typical.
Sleep in today. Yeah. And we're driving... at least an hour, probably an hour and a half, 2 hours, sometimes down to San Diego to do a show. Getting there an hour before the show starts. So if a show's at 8:30, we're there by 7:30. And we usually do two shows at each school. They're 45 minutes apiece, 15 minutes in between to switch out the audience.
Yep, exactly what I do.
Yeah. Then another 30 minutes to pack up. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can get another show in the afternoon and another school and run off to that and do another one.
And then get back in the car and drive on home, right?
Drive on home. Man, I have spent more time in the car with Mark Beckwith than I have waking hours with my wife.
That's what I tell everybody. I do the show for free. I charge you for the drive.
Yeah. We pass the time with podcasts like this guy, John Abrams. You know, he has a podcast.
I hear it's amazing.
Yeah, it is awesome.
I love you guys' sets. I was watching your videos, and I love your sets. Where did you guys create those, or you have a different set for each show?
We do. We have a different set. Typically, most of our shows use a PVC frame with something over it. There's a couple of our shows that have an original painting on this 7 by 10 frame. My sister painted this original painting set backdrop for the H2O, Where Did You Go? And also a different one for All That Trash, a show about recycling and natural resources.
I mean, it's painted on canvas, and we set it up there on stage, and the teachers and the kids are coming in like, oh, wow, that's great. I mean, because we're bringing a painting, a huge painting, to the school, plopping it right there on stage, and that's our backdrop.
I'm a big believer then that in the fact that, you know, what I've noticed over the years is that sometimes the audience places a value on you based on what you look like and what they see with their eyes. It creates a tangible value. I mean, you could be the greatest entertainer since sliced bread, but you know, if you've got something visual that looks really cool and part of the show and educational and really pops, in their minds, it increases your value.
Yeah, and it looks great on video too. So if they're looking at your website and they see your backdrop and your set, they say, "Oh, it must be worth more money."
Yeah. I think so. And I think of hitting them as soon as they walk in, because we are playing background music going on, and there's a big set like you see. So as they're sitting down, they're already making this positive judgment. I really believe in show business. In the first couple of minutes, they're deciding, I like this group, I hate this group. And if they say, I like this group, for the rest of the show, they're looking for things they like. And if they say, I hate this group, they're going to be looking for things they hate. And you want to just get on their good side right off the bat as they're walking in the room.
Right. I was talking to Robert Bax about this last week. You'll hear that coming out, I guess, June 11th or so. He was saying the exact same thing that you guys are. And I agree with that too. If you hit them hard and if something's fun, you get them on your side at the very beginning, it makes the rest of the show way easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We put a lot into the opening number. And I love a good, hard opening number that really defines the characters who you're going to see, defines that we're fun, shows them that we have talent. Not going to be messing around. It's going to be a great show. Mm-hmm. And right after that opening number, we come in with some kind of a surprise. So they think, oh, wow, we never know what's going to happen. There's going to maybe the phone rings and
a little left turn there.
Yeah. Or yep. I collapse on stage. And so.
Oh, are you guys still there?
Yep,
we are.
Can you hear? Yeah, I'll just cut that little part out. I don't know what that was. All of a sudden, it got really quiet.
Sometimes we just stop talking and you never know what's going on.
One thing I've learned is silence is golden. You know, it's like that they say comedy timing is important. Also, little spaces.
Yeah.
Not that we intended to do that, John, but silence can be golden.
It builds up anticipation.
Good job.
Thank you.
What's wrong?
Wait, so Mark, in 2004, you founded something called Shows That Teach. Tell me about that.
Well, we started getting sponsors for some of our shows. Actually, our first sponsor was a water agency, the San Diego County Water Authority. A kid had gone home and was sort of raving to his mom about our Wright Brothers musical show. And she, next one thing led to another. She ended up working. She was working for the Water Authority. We got a call from them, and they said, "Hey, would you write and produce and perform a show about water conservation, and we'll pay you.
Oh,
give it to the schools for free." So that kind of started that avenue of our business. And
is that where you guys came up with the H2O? Where'd you go?
Yes, yes. It all started back then. And it was about 2002, maybe.
And by the way, any sentence that, that someone's telling you that ends with, "and I'll pay you."
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very agreeable sentence.
It kind of caught our attention. Yeah. So we started performing that, and we got more and more bookings, and to a degree more than we could actually handle. I started hiring some other performers and training them. And we, besides Obadiah and I, there are three other performers in our company, and they mostly do the sponsored shows. We have water conservation sponsored shows. We actually have three now, and we have two different recycling shows.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Give a shout out to those guys.
Yeah,
that's Tuba Heatherton, Rebecca Lynn, and Jason Luckett.
And they're very good entertainers in their own right. And in fact, Tuba has been performing with us. He's an ex Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey clown, and he's been performing with us. I've actually known him longer than I've known you. I've known him for over 20 years, but he's been performing with us for about 14, 15 years. Yeah.
Tuba and I were in a band called Lou Wow and the Poi Boys. It's five guys on stilts and novelty music.
Yeah, talk about variety entertainers. Oh,
cool. Wait, you're a band that plays the entire show on stilts?
Yeah, exactly. We would play like festivals and fairs and company parties and things like that. And we'd be by the front doors. People are coming in and playing TV theme songs or maybe something like a Spike Jones type of.
And tell them your instrumentation.
Oh, we had a trumpet, a tuba, and oddly, tuba did not play tuba in this group. He had a cornet, and he played accordion. I played the trumpet as well. And then we had a trombone player and drums. Is that five? Did I say five?
I think, yeah.
Guys,
wait, drums, how do you play drums on stilts?
Well, it's like a marching band stilts, you know, it fits over the shoulders and you rat-a-tat-tat-tat.
Marching band drums, yeah.
Uh-huh. Little cymbal over here and right. Bum-bum-bum.
Right.
So back to shows that teach. So you started the H2O show, and did you add shows to that?
That was a two-man show, of course, and then I added, wrote another show called Waterology. That is a one performer show, and we have one now that's kind of a game show inspired by this guy named John who does a game show.
Oh, who's that guy? I don't know.
John Abrams. And yeah. Anyway, this is a game show about water called the Hydro Game Show. Then we have a two-man recycling show, all that trash. It's a two-person, two-performer show. And there's a one-performer show called the Crazy Bottles and Cans Show.
Mm-hmm. And all of those are under the shows that teach?
Yeah. Obadiah and I do them as well. They're sponsored. They're also the main, all they're the sponsored shows. Oh, I have one more sponsored show now as of about a year ago. It's a bicycle safety show. Got a call from City of Davis up in Northern California. So anyway, long story short, I ended up writing, because I'm a cyclist. I do that as a hobby. Ended up writing and producing a bicycle safety show.
Yeah, it's really cool because he's using a rear screen projector on stage. He's got the videos that his son helped him make. So the videos themselves are just funny and entertaining for the kids to watch, and then he's jumping out in front, interacting with the kids, and then back to the video and, you know, multimedia type of stuff.
Well, that's the best way to go about the school assemblies. Then you're not pigeonholed into musician or magician or juggler. You are a school entertainer. And you guys are true variety artists. I mean, you guys do everything in your shows.
Yeah.
One of my favorite routines, I was watching all your videos online, and I don't know if I'm giving away anything here or not, but something Obadiah does for, I think it's your bully show, where you put an iPad, I think it is, on your face.
Yeah. So I created a bully show, and I said, well, I have to get a bully into the show.
But, and by the way, let's say that this is a solo show, so they'll understand why you kind of need to do this stuff.
Yeah. Right, yeah. As a duo, you have a lot of leeway. Yeah. We can go back and forth and, you know, do things together. But as a solo show, I still wanted a second and third character added on. I wanted a bully in the show, but I didn't want to be the bully. So came up with this idea. I was like, oh, if I have a mouthpiece on the back of an iPad, and this is something that jugglers do. There's a thing called a mouth stick where they, I don't know, they put this thing in their mouth and it bites a certain way, and you can put a stick up and you can balance a ball in it. Well, I said, I'm going to take that, put it on the back of an iPad, and then have a video on the front of the iPad of a bully. And yes, the bully is talking, and I rigged it up so it has a microphone on the back of the iPad as well, plugged into the headset. And so now his voice is coming through the speakers, and the face is on there talking to the kids as a bully. And I've got three different ones of them. One of them is a girl. She's a bystander. And she's talking about how she's a bystander and she doesn't help the kids. And so all of a sudden, I've turned into this girl because I put the iPad mask on my face. And then the last one is me as a kid. So,
and you're doing all the body motion, right?
Right, exactly. I'm acting out the body.
That is the face and the it's the head.
Yeah. But it's an interesting thing because we're so used to writing shows for the two of us. We started writing shows for solo shows so we could go out, have a little more diversity, give our customers a little break in the price, but still be working ourselves. We wanted to use the same kind of a two-person thing. So when in my character show, we recorded a voice that would ring, and it's my mom on the phone, and the phone is coming through the speakers so the kids can hear my mom's voice, but she plays like the straight man and I'm the comic, and she's telling me what to do, just like Mark in our show is
I think she's a comic and you're a straight man.
I think I'm funnier than she is, but that's okay. Fine. Okay. Now I didn't see how you feel. I understand about that now. Okay. We're going to talk about this later.
Welcome to the world of straight men. The other person gets the credit for the humor.
But it worked. The straight man comic works so great in schools because I can play not just the comic, but I'm also playing the student who doesn't know the answer and I get it wrong. And instead of Mark lecturing the kids, tell them, you've got to recycle your stuff, he can get mad at me for not recycling. The kids can get on his side and point out how I'm wrong, even though they're just learning things for the first time.
Although the kids typically like you and, you know, like what you do. Mm-hmm. And I'm the spoil sport a little bit, although we try to balance it so I don't get booed off the stage. But the fact that I'm the straight man, in a loose kind of way, Obadiah plays the class clown, and I play the teacher role in a loose kind of way. So I keep it anchored. I keep it in the real world. I keep the show from getting too silly. But he is the one that they like watching and going, you're a funny guy.
Yeah, he's going to go off. And the stronger he holds his base, the crazier and funnier I can get. And I got to tell you something. Mark Beckwith is a fantastic straight man, and sometimes I'm going off the bat and then he turns to me with this stern look and he looks at me like he's supposed to. It's in the script, but he gives me this look and I think, oh crap, I really went too far that time. I'm like, oh no, he's just playing a part there.
I remember when we started working together, you thought I was really angry.
Yeah,
I was
like,
I go, hey, my acting's pretty good. Yeah.
You're like, I'm good. You're patting yourself on the back.
Okay, so you bring that up. Well, I got to bring up the fact that when we first worked it out, you were mouthing my punchlines.
You were mouthing his punchlines?
Yeah. I didn't realize I was doing it, and he pointed it out. And that's another advantage to having a partner. Sometimes you can see things you wouldn't see yourself.
Yeah,
you get
exactly
an objective point of view. And he says after the show, Mark, you know that you're mouthing
my line.
His lines.
That's what I'm saying.
I did not know I was doing that.
He didn't really believe it. We had a videotape. I said, see, you're right there. You're mouthing my line. Oh, my God, I am.
Okay, kids.
That was a hard habit to break, too.
Okay, kids, this is really spontaneous. We didn't write this before the show or anything. I swear, I'm just guessing.
Obadiah is so predictable. Oh my God.
All right, we're going to move into our fun new game that we're playing called Fact or Something John Just Made Up. Does that sound good to you guys?
Sounds okay.
Good. Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
So here's how it works. I'm going to give you a headline, and it may be true, it may be something I just made up. And then you guys can fill in the blanks and tell me if it's true or something I just made up. And then kind of tell me the story about it.
Okay.
Do you want us to make up facts if it's fiction?
I'm going to give you some headlines. And
okay. Tell you if it's right, true or false.
Yeah. And then if it's true, tell me about it, because I want to know. All right. So here we go. Let's see. Here's one. Mark and Obadiah were performing at Venice Beach on the beach, and Mark got sand in his eyes and performed the rest of the show with a scratched cornea.
It is something you made up.
Oh, okay. have you ever, you guys ever done a beach show?
I've done beach shows. Yeah, lots of beach shows. But mostly as a juggler. Have we ever done a... You and me on a beach?
I don't know. I know I've done some on the boardwalk in Santa Monica years ago.
Did you have a hat out?
Huh?
Did you put your hat out? Were you?
I got paid. A beach. I don't know. Plenty of outdoor gigs.
Yeah.
Of course, but.
I mean, I've been at the Jonathan Club several times down
there. Oh, yeah, the Jonathan Club. And, so I guess solo we have.
Solo.
Okay, because I've done one in my whole life. I've done... I don't know,
did
like you guys.
A scratch cornea?
No, I didn't have a scratch cornea, but I told myself I would never do another show on the beach again.
Okay. Don't blame you.
I did it one time.
Yeah, I hear you.
All right, here's another one. During a performance of their show, The Wright Brothers Musical, Obadiah entered the stage on stilts, tripped, and fell. He completed the show with a broken wrist.
That is... true. Totally true.
Yeah, what a trooper.
Oh!
Yeah, he fell. To his credit, we've done that show many, many times, hundreds, and he's never fallen. But this one time we were on a cramped stage, and there were some hidden things kind of stuck under some curtains. You know how that can be.
Yep.
And didn't see something, and he kind of hit it with this... and fell, and interesting.
It was, I finished the show, and then at the end of the show, I'm clapping along with it, and I stopped clapping, and I was like, oh my God, yeah, I think that's broken. So yeah, as soon as the show was done, I went off and got it x-rayed, and it was broken. For about a month, I was in a sling and Vicodin.
Oh, that explains a lot, Obadiah.
That's how you came up with that the Red Ribbon Week show, right?
Yes, Red Ribbon Week. Don't use Vicodin after the prescription's done.
Example of the show must go on, you know?
Yeah. That's right. So you didn't even know it was broken until afterwards?
Well, I mean, it hurt, but I thought, oh, that's just a sprain. It can't be broken, but oh, yeah.
He was so focused on what he was doing.
Yeah.
Well, I applaud you.
Well, I didn't applaud.
Because it hurt like heck. All right, here's another one for you guys. You ready?
Yep,
ready.
Here we go. After packing up all the props and costumes and putting them on a rack on top of Mark's car, while driving on the freeway, Mark looked back in the mirror and saw all the costumes and props on the freeway behind them.
That is true.
Oh!
True.
I'll let you tell this story. Thanks, over there.
Yeah, Mark had to mention that thing and bring that up. My fault entirely. Great.
Anyway. I threw him under the bus on this one.
We've been doing like two shows at schools and running out of room inside the car. And so I think it was even my idea to put something on top of the roof, and then we bought this special thing, and it's like the first time using it, and I really thought that I had strapped it down like the instructions told me, and I didn't. Flew off, and we got off of the next exit, went back around, came up, and the cars were brought in. We had to get the stuff because it was
these are valuable props and costumes for us.
Not only just valuable, but hard to like replace because, well, I made some of the stuff in there and we ordered it off and had it for years. So I grabbed as much stuff of it.
He's on the freeway picking up props. And costume.
Yeah.
Cars are zooming by.
I got 80 or 90% of the stuff back in the car. At home and never put anything on the roof again.
Yep. Although, that's an awful story.
We could do it. I could put it up there. But anyway, so not going to happen again.
I just bought a bigger car.
So you can put everything inside instead of outside.
Yep.
Yeah. The car is much bigger now.
and now Obadiah gets to actually ride on the inside of the car.
Yeah, he could. Yeah. I guess if you were on the top and you fell off it, it'd just be one thing to pick up.
But the question is, would Mark stop? That's the real question. All right, here's another one here. Mark and Obadiah have Justin Bieber's phone number in each of their cell phones.
That is
false.
False.
Oh, dang. I was hoping that was true. That was one of those I made up, and I thought, well, what if it is true?
Yeah.
Like his last hit song. That was a good song. About his girlfriend. I can't remember what it is, but he did like that one. Because he had a trumpet in it. It had a trumpet
song. Oh, yeah, the trumpet. And it's basically a trumpet and guitar. Yeah. You and I could probably do that song if the lyrics were appropriate. Yeah.
I don't know. Is he old school now?
He might be, but he's less than 25. I mean, how old can he be?
Yeah, but I don't know of any hits. You know, when I talk to the kids, I never hear his name anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. All right, here's another one for you. Mark and Obadiah were the opening act for punk rock group The Knack, who had the classic hit song, My Sharona.
That is...
True.
Yo.
Yes. In Woodland Hills at the what do they call that stage?
It's like an outdoor amphitheater.
Outdoor amphitheater
where they have thousands of people in front.
Right, and the people who run that also run the Valley Cultural Center. And we were doing that week we were performing at their small little theater, History of Rock and Roll. The guy called us up and he needed an opening act. He said, you play rock and roll? This is a rock and roll thing. Can you come out and play rock and roll? He thought we could just do a rock and roll set for any adults. And was like, yeah, we can do that. You know what we do. Yeah. Well, he didn't know what we did. That he thought we did something different. But
we actually do a parody of the My Sharona song. Yeah. Just coincidentally.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. So we're doing the show, and it was fun. There's a dressing room and a little green room for the people. And I was like, well, that peek in the refrigerator. This refrigerator for the Knack was packed with beer. I mean, imagine a refrigerator, but every square inch of the inside was beer. And it's like, well, that's cool. Okay, don't touch it now. But then we thought, oh, okay, we're going to pack up all their stuff, and the Knack is about to go on. Hey, let's head back to the thing. Let's get a beer for the Knack. I mean, how cool would that be, is to drink a beer in the green room for the Knack? We get back there and open up the refrigerator. Every beer was gone. I couldn't before the show.
They went through all their beer.
Before the show?
Yeah. Before the show. There was nothing left for us.
Now in our tech riders, we always put lots of beer in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
So we can do our shows just like the Knack.
Those elementary schools love that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, here's something you guys didn't know. Every time I write up contracts, I have a vinyl record player behind me. So every time I write up contracts, I take out an album and I put it on there, and the album lasts whatever, 10, 15 minutes, and it makes me kind of get up from my desk and do it. And coincidentally and ironically, I happen to have in my hands an album called Get the Knack.
Oh,
okay.
By the Knack. And I'm looking at the back here. It says it has My Sharona on it. And I have this album on vinyl. And I'm opening it up right now. And I'm pulling out the little sleeve on the inside. And it has all the lyrics and stuff. And then it says on the very bottom, very small writing, thank you to Mark Beckwith and Obadiah Thomas for opening.
Oh, my God. Isn't that awesome?
it's signed Doug Feger. He's the lead singer. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Unbelievable,
and
I'd
rightly
say.
Deserved, too. Sure.
Well, speaking of opening acts, though, we also opened for Ehrlichman, the attorney of Nixon at the book fair.
Oh, yeah.
We were doing the Los Angeles Book Fair, and we were on stage, and we're going back, and there's some other guy walking on. I was like, oh, hi there. What's your name? Who are you? Oh, it's John Ehrlichman from
Watergate guy.
Yeah. We opened for him. Yeah.
That should be on your resume.
Oh, yeah. Bam. I can just feel everybody in the audience just seething with jealousy right now for the attorney.
How do you open for a lawyer? You know, how do you open for an attorney? That's a good story. All right, so that was Fact or Something John Just Made Up. Yay!
Yay!
That was Fact or Something John Just Made Up.
So other than the time all the stuff fell off the top of your car, do you have any other horror stories? I have a million of them because we've done so many shows. You're bound to run into something. Do you have a horror story that you can give me?
Oh, man.
Let's see. Well, we're driving out to Santa Barbara County, mm-hmm. doing a show there, and we're maybe running 10 minutes late, no big deal, and then flat tire. Pulls over to the side of the road. We get out of the car and we can't even find the tire because you just bought this new car. We don't even know where the spare tire is. Like, great. He's pulling out this thing. Okay. Mark, you call AAA. I'm going to call the school, tell them we're going to be late and this is possible. And then as we're dialing our phone, this truck pulls up in front of us. It's like, what is this? And this guy gets out and says, you guys need some help? I was like, yeah. And he's got this vest on and he's from like Santa Barbara County. And he's just this highway guy that goes around helping people on the highways. And I'm here to help you out.
Just for nothing.
For nothing. And he knew where the tire was and he opened it up and he pulled out the tire and he changed it. And I got to tell you, changing a tire on a freeway is crazy dangerous. I mean,
yeah.
And this is this guy's job, and he does it. And we took a picture with him and sent us off and was like, thank you so much. We got there and did the show on time. And then the weird thing is, as I called up the Santa Barbara Transportation Division that he said he was in, and I said, hey, guys, I got to thank you for Carlos, the guy that came out. And they said, we don't have a Carlos working for us. And then I looked at the picture I took. It was blank. Okay, none of that last part. That's the first
the
part.
First
okay,
part was
the
true,
first
though.
Part was true. They really cut the program, saved our butt. Oh, and there was the ripe of the story.
By the way, we've been doing this for almost 20 years, thousands of performances. We always say everything happens once.
That's our motto.
Everything possible. Can happen once.
Yeah, yep.
We try to prevent it from happening a second time, but we don't get down on ourselves if it happens one time.
Yeah, say, oh yeah, that hasn't happened yet. Okay, yeah. Then it's okay.
Yeah. So why don't you tell them about the Wright Brothers show? When the kid shouts the thing.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Okay, so Wright Brothers show. We have a time when the plane crashes. We have sound effects. He's out front. He's playing the part of William Tate.
William Tate, the
postmaster there in Kitty Hawk, and who was helping the Wright brothers. And he's there talking to the audience and doing his thing. Anyway, the plane crashes. I come. I'm Wilbur Wright. I'm the one who was supposedly flying the plane. And I come from the back staggering as if I just crashed. And I'm staggering in front of the plane, and I'm almost tripping. And then some kid shouts from the audience, hey, you're not the funny one.
Oh!
Oh, that was my favorite time in all of Razzle Bam Boom history right there. Some kid in the back. Oh.
I wish you guys had that on video.
Oh, oh my God.
Arnold Elementary, Torrance.
I know the school because I was born and raised in Torrance.
Oh, yeah, they are the Alley Cats. They are their mascot is homeless animals.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Yeah,
that's
any places, Mark. I don't know what you're doing, but I'm paying attention, learning something when I'm at the schools.
Okay. I guess that's better than cougars, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But the ripe of this is so
funny. Tell them that joke.
Oh, yeah, because I'm
talking about things that happen.
Yeah, we get the t-shirts up on stage at the end of 200 Years of American Music, and they're dancing. And I always like to incorporate, you know, something about the city or the school that we're working in. And after they're all done, I say, hey, everyone, that's your big round of applause for the Dancing Cougars.
Oh!
Oh, I mean, the teachers.
Yeah, the teachers.
Who are, man.
The kids didn't get it, but the teachers are all dying, huh?
Yes. Luckily, I was not much younger than them when I said it. I was about the same age, so I think it worked out.
Well, now you guys are telling hilarious stories, and you've done thousands of shows. Now, recently, you put together some kind of a video series. It's called Perform School Assemblies, Make a Living, Make a Difference.
Yes.
What's that all about?
It's a series of 50 videos plus a lot of other auxiliary materials that teach professional performers how to be school performers, how to be school assembly performers. Mm. There's a lot to know, as you know, John, and there's things we've learned over the last couple decades. Some things we learned the hard way, and some things took us years to figure out. Well, it's a series of 50 videos and other materials and a Facebook page that give lots of detailed information on what to do and how to put yourself on the fast track to making money and being a full-time professional school assembly performer.
50 videos. So if someone were to get this, do they get some sort of code, or how does that work?
They go online, they can go to performschoolassemblies.com right now, and that'll allow you to see some samples. You can sign up and get a few free courses, and if you buy the course, then basically the course is there. It's online, and you stream it.
Yeah,
yes.
Got it.
But you can also download audio versions if you want to listen in your car.
Yeah, they create a podcast for you. You can also download a PDF if you're more of a reader.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have this thing with you. And it's, once you're on the course, it's a lifelong course because it's just there, and it's, you know, you have as much time as you want to do it.
I don't expect you to give away the whole thing, but give us just a little taste so my audience can...
There's a big variety because everything from... something technical like how to set up your PA mixer properly in a school gymnasium that might have a lot of natural reverb to make you heard more clearly. Everything from something technical like that to a promotional thing like with the emails. Tell them maybe something about email campaign or some of our promotional campaigns.
Yeah. Yeah, we've learned a lot about promoting ourselves and what the principals in the PTA want to read to hire, not what we want to tell them, but what they want to read. We talk about how to organize that, and we even have templates for what we actually use. You can actually download what I'm using to book our gigs right now and rewrite them for yourself.
Nice.
The do's and don'ts of how to create a show.
Yeah, from the very beginning, like what topic? You got to start with the topic.
That's super important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How to name your show. I mean,
the title. Yeah.
The title is so important. That's going to sell it a lot.
Yep.
And then we go through the writing process about different ways. One of the writing tips that we use in our own thing, we really encourage everyone else to take this on, is that schools love acronyms. At any school, they're going to have posters all over, and it says SMART, which stands for, well, you know, what I don't know what it is, but
whatever, yeah.
Whatever it is.
It doesn't matter. SMAR, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but we have an acronym called...
that we use in our Say Yes to Success.
Yes.
And the acronym is GREAT, the word GREAT.
And the GREAT stands for goals, for G, R is retry, excel, attention, like focus, and training, like in practice. And but if you do that type of stuff, because the schools are so into the acronyms, it feels like you're talking their language, that it's easy to remember. And it also makes it really easy to write a show because we came up with this thing. I said, okay, what are the things? Okay, great. GREAT. Oh yeah, we have five things we have to write. And then we wrote one thing, we wrote another thing. And it just like becomes an outline for your show right off the bat. You can focus on the message and the topic that way.
You know, when we started creating this show, this course, I thought, okay, we might have 15, 20 videos. But as we got into it, I realized there is a lot that we know that we've figured out or learned the hard way, whatever, over the years. It just kept coming and coming and coming and coming.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of the stuff, I can't say that we came up with some innovative thing.
No, I mean, some of it, yeah.
You could learn all this stuff on your own,
yeah.
But it would take a decade. And you could go to this course, and in 50 videos, and in 3 months, you could walk away with 10 years worth of knowledge.
By the way, John, if I can just do a quick plug, I know this sounds like an infomercial, but we decided today, before we started talking to you, that we would give your listeners, I guess the first three listeners.
We're going to do two things. Number one, we normally are selling this as an hour one-on-one time with us. But instead of selling it to you, we're going to give it to you. But instead of giving it to you, we're going to pay you to take it. So you get a $100 discount and a free one-on-one session with Mark.
Consulting session.
Yeah. And we can talk about topic choices, your school assembly that you're in. We can go over your particular show and how to make it more marketable, come up with a strategy, whatever you want to use that hour time for. And we're going to pay you $100 to take that extra time.
So well, I appreciate that. So
we're putting it.
Yeah.
We're paying them.
Well, yeah.
We're not saying we're giving them a $100 discount.
No, we are going to pay you $100 to get an
hour
over
time.
See
how he thinks. Yeah, that's,
thinking okay. of that time.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do, well, John will give you the code, and you're going to put it in the thing you do with the podcast. I don't know whatever. Anyway, but there'll be a special coupon available in the link below.
Perfect. And I will put that in my show notes too. We'll talk it over after we stop recording today, and we'll figure it out. Maybe we can use the word variety or something like that.
Yes. Okay. We can do that.
So from what I'm hearing, the first three people who order this, they will get not $100 discount, but you'll pay them $100 after they pay for the thing. And then they get a 1 hour free consulting session with you guys. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yes.
Perfect. Perfect. I will put that in the show notes. That'll be excellent. They'll love that. So that's only the first three listeners.
Yep. Great.
Before we go any further, what's the website that they go to order that?
PerformSchoolAssemblies.com.
Okay. PerformSchoolAssemblies.com.
Yeah, that should take you to another, once you fill out the thing and hit the whatever thing, it'll take you to another link, and they're going to say coupon, pop in the coupon code there, and boom, you're off and running.
Gotcha. Got it. So, Mark, you have a video called What a Smart Pig that you're promoting right now. What's going on with that?
Yeah, it's a video series, or it's intended to be, of little short videos, 3-minute videos on YouTube for free that help kids build vocabulary.
Hmm.
Focused, targeted to 3 to 6-year-olds. And I'm doing it for fun. You know, over the years, I've done some puppetry. You know, I enjoy doing this thing. I enjoy editing video. And I don't think I'm going to get rich doing this, but I'm sort of indulging myself as something I've been wanting to do for quite some time. And my friends like Obadiah and Tuba are helping me. They're making appearances. But the main characters are this pig puppet and this dog puppet. And it's called What a Smart Pig. What a Smart Pig. And it's a series of videos on YouTube for anybody that has kids.
Now, I think you're selling yourself short. I do think this could make a lot of money. But it's going to take some time to build an audience here.
Yeah.
But you're filling a perfect need in a fun way that you already know how to do. And what are some of the words that you're teaching the kids?
Oh, eventually I want to teach hundreds of words. But say the word, okay, again, the age 3 to 6.
Yep.
How about the word appropriate?
Mm.
Adults are always saying, is that appropriate? Well, maybe you should teach them what appropriate means, for example. Or maybe accomplishment. Maybe that word. Accomplishment. That's a good one.
So this is exciting because it's not just the little tiny words that you might expect little tiny kids to understand. It's real big words.
Abstract words.
And after your kid watches this, your kid's going to be smarter.
I love the idea of a little 4-year-old walking up to his parents and saying, Mom, Dad, was that appropriate? And I've watched the video that you put out, the most recent one. Uh-huh. It's really cute and fun.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
It is really fun. We're, so what's the YouTube channel? What's the name of it?
It's just called What a Smart Pig. I think at this point, they would just have to go to YouTube or Facebook, but YouTube is more direct. Put in the search bar, What a Smart Pig, and look for choices that look like puppets.
Oh, okay. And I'll put that link in the show notes also.
Okay, thanks.
Perfect. Now, any advice for the beginner? I have a couple of different types of people in my audience. Some of them are working pros and some of them are beginners. What advice do you guys have for a beginner just starting out to do those school assemblies?
Well, I would say the one thing is have the mindset that you're going to really create a really quality show. Not that you don't already have a quality entertainment show, but this show has to have true, valuable content that is worth their all the kids' time away from the classroom.
Yep.
And sometimes it goes beyond. You can't just say, oh, okay, I'm a juggler. I'm going to put in a few messages about recycling.
Yeah.
You can't just do that. The teachers are going to see right through that. They're going to say, all you're doing is adapting your entertainment show and you've thrown a few messages. We could have done that in the classroom. Thank you very much. Don't come back.
Yeah.
So no, you kind of have to create it from scratch and really give it some thought. And I would suggest talking to a lot of teachers and principals along the way.
Yeah, we think writing the content first and really being content oriented, and then looking at maybe trying to find the magic trick or a juggling trick that might complement it, or even better yet, is coming up with a completely new routine that you've never done before. Because I feel like some of these guys are trying to like shimmy that one routine that they've always done and just kind of force it in. It's like, oh,
yeah, that's backwards. Don't start with your comedy or your entertainment routines and try to make them educational. Start with the education and figure out the fun part later.
Right. Yeah. Now, how about the working pro? How about the guy that's been doing it for a while?
Well, I'll confess one of my failings over the years is that I had a really good show, a solo show, even with Razzle Bam Boom. I had really good shows, and then I said, okay, we got this. Let's just keep on going. But then you got to keep creating. You have to keep coming up with new material. And that's how we end up with 11 shows. And Mark was always pushing me to come up with another show. And I'm like, oh, come on. We have 3 shows. We don't need any more shows. Well, man, if we were trying to rely on the first 3 shows we wrote, we wouldn't be talking to you. I'll tell you that right now.
So wouldn't be paying the rent. Yeah.
And you, as a performer, as a creative person, you get fearful. It's like, well, if I write something new, it won't be as good as that thing I've been working on for 5 years. And
actually, there's truth to that. Probably the first 6 months, it's not going to be as good as
it's not. Oh, and it's painful to do that new show for the first time. But the thing is, number one, it gets better. And number two, your audience wants to see you do something different. Number three, you can get better and better at writing more relevant stuff for your customers. And it makes you just so much more marketable because you go, well, would you like this to this? I mean, we're not just saying, would you like this show? We're saying, would you like a topic about conservation? Would you like a topic about character? Would you like a topic about science? Would you like a topic about art? Oh, okay, art. Let's talk about the 3 different shows we can do for art that might fit into you. We could do the Wright Brothers musical. We could do the 200 Years of American Music or History of Rock and Roll. So it's like they have a choice and then a second choice, and people just love having choices. There were some places we performed at, like 6 years in a row. We did 6 different shows, and then they say, what else do you have new? I was like, come on, you could redo the first show.
Yeah, your kids graduated. Yeah. Your kindergartners are done. They're in 7th grade now. Yeah.
So you think we would have stopped at 6 shows, but oh my.
No.
I think it's me. I'll take the blame for being obsessive about this.
Yeah.
Well, I say the more shows, the better. I know there are some schools that hire me for all the shows that I do in 1 year.
Wow. I've never had that.
I don't have 11 shows. I wish I had 11 shows. If I had 11 shows, they probably wouldn't hire me for all of them. But I have enough shows where they hire me for all of them in 1 year. So if they hire you for 2 or 3, that's still 3 years or 4 years worth of shows.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's great. Good for you guys.
Yeah.
Dang. All right, so give us a couple of books or a book recommendation and tell us why.
Oh, man, the book series I loved reading so much as a performer was everything George Burns wrote.
Oh.
George Burns has a ton of books, and they're all funny, and they have these great stories about showbiz. That's how I think about showbiz tips and advice in my own head, is like stories I've heard in the past and how it relates to my life right now. And George Burns just has tons of great stories, and I wish I could live back in that day, because George Burns was always like hanging out with Jackie Gleason and just all these big huge stars, right? And Jack Benny, that was his best friend.
Oh.
And they were like, oh, let's have a party. And they'd all show up at this house, and they'd be singing, and they'd be telling jokes and doing routines for each other and just entertaining. What a ball that would be.
Oh, to be a fly on the wall there, huh?
Yeah.
George Burns, for anybody listening to this who doesn't know who George Burns is, he's one of the he was a big star and comedy guy in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, but he became super famous in a movie called Oh God. And I think he was 90 years old or something when he did that.
90 years old, yeah. He lived to be 100.
Exactly 100.
And I'd like to add that George Burns is a famous straight man.
Thank you, Mark.
He's a famous straight man, but you know, another great thing that he
did—his wife was a funny
guy. Yeah, it was Burns and Allen. Well, first I'll tell you that a classic straight man comic—you can always tell that the straight man gets top billing, and the comic is always second. So yes. Burns and Allen, Lewis,
Martin
and Lewis,
yeah.
Yep. And Smothers Brothers. Well, that's a bad example. Yeah. But
Abbott Costello.
Abbott Costello, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. If you go back to in history, I have heard the rumor, perhaps a myth, that the straight guy got more money than the comic because it was harder to be a good straight
and
guy.
And that's how it is in our duo.
It is not a way neater way in our duo at all.
You wouldn't know. I keep the books. Oh, I do the bookkeeping.
Wait a minute. We're in your office right now, and I see on the shelf here, real books, books I show Obadiah. What the?
Yeah. He has everybody write two checks, one real check and then one fake one. He only shows you the fake one. Well, I know you guys' time is valuable, so tell us, how can folks get a hold of you?
Yeah, they can look on. We're on Facebook. Come and like our page on
Razzle Bam Boom.
Razzle Bam Boom.
Or razzleBamBoom.com
online.
Should we spell it, or do we need to spell it?
Yeah, we should probably spell it. It's going to be we'll spell it because people are just listening. How do you spell it?
R A Z Z L E B A M B O O M.
Yeah.
Razzle Bam Boom.
Boom.
Yeah.
Three different words.
So that's on Facebook. Now, email, website.
Yeah. Obadiah@razzlebamboom.com or
Mark@razzlebamboom.com. You already spelled your name. They know how to spell your name.
Yeah. Obediah. Yeah.
There you go. And that's how they can get a hold of you guys and check you out on Facebook. And I think that's it, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. So thank you, Mark and Obadiah, for doing my podcast. You guys are awesome.
Hey, let's hear it for John.
Yay!
Yay.
We just wrote your new theme song, John.
Theme song there. John Abrams. Variety artist, man. John Abrams. Variety artist, yes, you can.
Boom. I'm going to hold you guys to that.
I'm going to send you a bell.
All right. Well, thanks all our variety artists, including you guys. If you found this podcast valuable, tell a friend. That's how we can spread the word. This was a really super fun one. And don't forget to go to my website. Oh, and get your free copywriting checklist that I just finished at thevarietyartist.com. Absolutely free. And feel free to reach me at john@thevarietyartist.com or join my Facebook group at The Variety Artist, where you can ask me to ask questions of our wonderful guests like Mark and Obadiah. I am on Twitter at The Variety. It's the little at sign, The Variety Artist, with no T at the end because I didn't have room. Or visit my website at thevarietyartist.com, where you'll find super fun, informative blogs with all the show notes from today's interview. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.